what triggered this bizarre behavior.
Journey into the cold heart of Northern Darkness with Nordic Crimes.
That case became like a scene from a horror movie.
A new true crime documentary series that chilled the bone.
The hunger for killing is increasing in the course of these homicides.
Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Nordic Crimes is a part of the Acast family.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
How are you, mate?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Just a lot been going on these last several days.
Mate, it's really kicked off, hasn't it?
It's going rapidly now.
Hello, and welcome back to 1 Minute Remaining. My name is Jack Lawrence, the host and creator of this show. Recently, we covered the case of the Cain brothers and Mark Harper, three teenage boys who were arrested, tried and convicted for the murder of Jimmy Hill. It's a crime they have always maintained was self-defense. As you'll know if you've been following the story, Mark Harper will be released from prison after serving 3 years of his original 35-year sentence, while Jeremy and his brother Zachary are still incarcerated to this day. Recently, Jeremy's wife messaged me sharing a post that had been made on Facebook, a post that was made by this lady.
Hello, Katie.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you so much indeed for...
Katie is from the Pleasant Grove community. She grew up there and she, in fact, went to school with the Cains. She was a year older than them but knew their older brother. Her post to her over 4,000 followers read as follows.
Pleasant Grove folks, do y'all know there's a podcast with the Cain brothers' side of the Jimmy Hill murder? I just started episode 1. It's on Apple Podcasts. Pinning this to discuss in the comments.
So I, of course, jumped into the over 200 comments at the time to see the reaction and the thoughts from the very community where this incident took place. And I'll be honest, I did so with a sense of trepidation as to what I might read. Many years ago, while working on a radio show here in Australia with two very high-profile individuals, I learned a very important rule. Never read the comments. Nonetheless, I scrolled down. The very first comment simply read, "It's so eye-opening." And just underneath, another comment from Katie.
I'm going to go into it with an open mind. I did not like those kids.
Uh-oh, where's this going? However, as I continued to read the comments, it was like watching in real time someone's opinion very quickly doing a 180. Another comment reads, "My childhood is a lie." Katie responds in all caps,
"A whole lie."
Another comment reads, "Oh my word." And eventually, as the comments continue, there is a new post from the lady who disliked these boys. And it simply reads,
#Hashtag free the Cains.
I got notified by Jeremy's wife that about your post. Mm-hmm. Now, you've got over 4,000 followers on Facebook and you've obviously been made aware of the podcast about the boys and the situation. I jumped over and there was already a couple of hundred comments when I jumped over and had a look at the post. And what I found really interesting was reading through the comments at the very start, you make no bones about the fact that you basically didn't think very highly of the boys and you were listening to this with an open mind, which I love, because then reading through the comments, it shows a story of obviously you listening to the show and commenting as you're listening through different episodes, and you start with not a fan of these boys, listening with an open mind, and all of a sudden, this is blowing my mind, oh my God, to the point where you're like, hashtag free the Canes.
I am ready to ride out for these boys.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. My discontent from them came from a teenage mindset, right?
Yep.
And I felt, because I only had the information that we were told based on what Kevin freaking Doty said, and based on what the newspapers were putting out, I was like, you know, well, yeah, I mean, I'm right to not like them. Look at, you know, look what they did, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And going into adulthood, I have a 15-year-old right now. I have four kids. I have a 15-year-old son right now, and I was sick to my stomach at myself, honestly, for how harshly I judged these kids, because in my brain, they're still kids. I never saw them again, never saw a picture of them until recently. So I am picturing these teenagers, these baby-faced teenagers, as a 40-year-old woman. And I'm thinking, oh my God, like, I was judging them based on discontent, honestly, that I had for their older brother.
Yep.
There was a situation, they were mean to me, I cried at school, whatever. It's mind blowing as you go through adulthood, as you experience, you know, adult things, hearing their voices really was disconcerting. You know, they're grown men now, and to know that they have not seen the outside world since they were the same age as my son. You know, now as a grown up, I'm like, this doesn't feel good. This doesn't feel right. And yeah, I wanted to, I consider myself an advocate. I've lobbied for legislation in our state that forwarded the interest of children with autism. And I have a very strong passion for things that are not right and need to be righted. And I have a platform and a voice and the means to help.
I was only talking to Jeremy yesterday, actually. He called me. We were discussing the post and some of the comments and that sort of stuff. And sort of, I said to him, I said, it blows my mind that it's been 22, nearly 23 years now, and there's people that are on this post saying, you know, I didn't know this, I didn't know that. You know, I feel like my whole childhood's a lie. And I just said to him, I said, I can't believe it's taken 23 years for people to find out some of this information.
I mean, that's the thing, because every lawyer we hired just told us, don't say nothing, don't talk about it, don't discuss it with anybody, we're trying to work something out. And, you know, after realizing it was all, because we had a thing going at one time right after this happened, where there was a Mark's dad started a thing online, which, you know, stuff wasn't that big back then. It was like a forum or something. And then my dad and my uncle and some family members, they got a they printed out about 30,000 flyers and started handing them out at gas stations and putting them in places, and people were getting and reading it and that kind of thing. So we started making a difference there. And then the lawyers were like, look, just stop doing that, and we're trying to work something out. You know, they just, you know, let it die down a little bit. And so we stopped, and they let Mark out and left us in here. And then Mark's dad blamed everything on my dad. You know, that's another little situation where we started trying to put the word out. That was about 3 years after we'd been in, and probably about two, somewhere around there. And that's when kind of pressure got on it, and Mark got out. And then the lawyer just keep it quiet. And we're going to do this. We're going to try to work this out. We're going to see if we can talk to DA about that. And then things just never happened.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, it's 20 years. So I finally said, enough is enough. I got to find someone that can reach some people. And my cousin found you, and I think you're one of the first few people, I think really the first person she messaged, but I mean, she done some research and stuff and found someone that she thought could do a good job and messaged you, and here we are. So,
you know, thankfully we have the internet and podcasts and social media now, you know?
Yeah.
Cause you know, this was 2001, 2002. All we had was, you know, word of mouth.
Yeah.
And, you know, printed paper. I mean, there, you know, the internet was not a source of information for anyone then.
You know, as I've learned from doing this show now for the past sort of year and a half. You know, you always know that the media skews things. And I mean, I worked in the radio industry for 14 years before I started the podcast. And, you know, the media can skew things certain ways. But once you sort of hear the full story, as it were, or more of the story, you see just how much the media doesn't put in because it doesn't fit with the narrative that they're going with.
And the influence that the media has, whether people want to admit it or not, even over, you know, a jury. I mean, I know they're not supposed to, you know, leave and go read the news, but, you know, who's to say they don't?
Of course they do.
It's crazy. They have an influence and control over our whole being.
People see something written down and they believe it.
I mean, and even back then, I mean, we heard something spoken and we believe it.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things from this, from the information that came out on your podcast was the statements from the kids that were at the police department.
Yeah. I was actually going to ask you about that.
Okay.
Yeah, because Kevin Doherty's name keeps popping up with people going, well, I knew that was rubbish as soon as I read it. Why is everyone so adamant that Kevin Doherty's statement would have been false?
Kevin Doherty was a problematic person. He was a problematic kid. He was a known liar. He was probably the most or one of the most problematic people in our grade. And you know, I grew up with these people from kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not someone I had, you know, a few years of experience with. I grew up with Kevin Doherty, and Blake Wisenhunt will be the other one.
Yeah.
Kevin and I have not kept in touch since high school. I don't think very many people did catch up with him or keep up with him. But I laughed audibly when I got to that part in your podcast. And I hit my husband in the arm, and he's not from Pleasant Grove. He doesn't know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hit him in the arm. And I'm like, I can't believe anything Kevin Doherty ever said was even considered. It's amazing to me that the things that we heard about, particularly Zach, that he showed no remorse, that he was bragging about beating this man to death, that he was hoping that he died. I believed that for a lot of years because that's just what we heard. I had no idea that the source was the most problematic, most untrustworthy person in our graduating class.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com. Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit UH1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
From what I gather, the biggest thing that everyone thought was true came from Kevin Doherty's statement, was that Zach was basically bragging about having beat the shit out of Jimmy Hill, and he hoped he died and he didn't care what had happened to him and all the rest of it. They didn't realize it came from Kevin Doherty, and a lot of the community are like, nothing that guy says you can take as truth at all.
Even more so against us is because of the situation he was in. At the community service was
because of you.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, my parents. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, he definitely had a vendetta against us. So, and like he told us in 2005 that, you know, I think I talked about that, that when I was seeing him in the jail, when he was in jail, we was having a hearing for a Rule 32 3 years after. It was right after Mark, right at the same time Mark went to court. A couple of weeks later, we went to court. And Mark obviously got out. We didn't, but he seen us and was like, well, tell him to call me up there. I'll tell him I lied. I can't believe I did that. This is, you know, it was wrong and I'm sorry and all this kind of stuff.
This Facebook post, as this episode of the show goes out, has now gained almost 500 comments from people from or around the Pleasant Grove area, a community who have almost all said that the story they heard growing up was nothing like what they have heard from the boys who were there that day.
Hello.
Hello, is that Blake?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Blake. My name's Jack Lawrence. I'm the host of the podcast where I told the story of the Cain brothers.
Hey, Jack. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Katie gave me your number. I hope you don't mind me giving you a call.
Small town gossip, fifth-hand accounts, newspaper articles, and a friend of a friend who knew someone who spoke with the boys, and that's how they got their information.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that came to light over the course of the episodes of the podcast were things that I certainly wasn't aware of. And Pleasant Grove is, you know, an interesting community. It's a small town, like you said. But of course, at the time, you know, it's 2001. It's before we have the internet and social media and things like that. So, you know, really the only opinions you heard about were the ones of your neighbors and your friends around you. And I know that, you know, in Pleasant Grove, there was always the joke that everybody in Pleasant Grove had two friends, your best friend and then the friend that you gossip to that friend about. that was very much the case in Pleasant Grove, because it was so small that everybody really knew everybody. Yeah. And, you know, there were names that came up in the story that I'm familiar with. I grew up with these people. In fact, my very first job, I worked at the Hills Grocery Store. That's the only place I ever worked before I got into my current career working in a pharmacy. Was I worked for a year at Hills, and Jimmy was one of my managers.
Hello.
Hello, is that Jacob?
It is.
Hi, Jacob. My name's Jack Lawrence. I'm the host of the podcast where I told the story of the Cain brothers.
Yeah, for sure.
Was it spoken about a lot in the community at the time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's all everybody talked about. That year when it happened, I was a senior, and so we were just getting ready to graduate our senior year. So that was around prom and, you know, that time of year. And in Pleasant Grove back then, you know, everybody was in everybody's business. Everybody knew everybody. Yeah, it was a lot of talking going on about it for sure.
And was there the general sort of consensus that the boys sort of deserved whatever they got?
Yeah. I mean, at the time, the way it was portrayed in the newspapers and everything was that they just beat the shit out of him with baseball bats.
Yeah.
Nothing about him actually laying hands on Mark first before anything else happened. None of that was ever brought out that I remember, and nothing was ever brought out about him having a weapon.
And really the only information out there is what you read in the newspaper, what you see on the news, and what, you know, the other members in the community have to say about it. So you kind of, you know, at surface level, you hear about this awful thing that's happened and you just really draw the obvious conclusion, not having all the facts.
Yeah.
But having access to the information that we have now, I'm not so sure now that what happened was the right thing to happen.
This is the very first time in OMR's existence that I've actually been able to see firsthand a community that surrounded an incident we've spoken about actually come together to discuss it, debate it, and begin to explore the fact that what they'd been told for many years may not have been exactly how things happened that day.
I've worked very closely with Cam Ward, who was a state senator in 2017, but is now the director of pardons and paroles. So that's kind of a odd place for me to be right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's handy.
I also am under no impression that he would do anything outside of the bounds of his job.
No, of course not.
But I'm willing to do whatever I think I'm good at to help at least bring this story to light where these kids are not villains in everyone's mind.
When I first began recording with the brothers, one of the first people I spoke with was their father.
Hello.
Mr. Kane.
Yes, sir.
It's Jack here. How are you, sir?
All right.
Steve and I haven't spoken since our first call that day. So I wanted to, of course, catch up with him and see how the family had been since the episodes had aired and what, if any, reaction that they themselves have got from the community. How is everyone going?
Everything seems to be going great. I mean, it seems to be moving quite along. Other people's getting a hold of it now, and it's moving along pretty good.
I guess the reason I want to catch up with you is to talk about, you know, what's happened since the show's gone out. And I don't know if you had to listen to it at all. I'm sure it's very tricky or very probably very upsetting to listen to.
Oh, no. You've done a great job on it. I was really pleased with it. I couldn't believe how you put it together like that. I sat there thinking, man, that cuss, he got this figured out. I couldn't even begin to tie that together. That's the reason why I'm in construction.
I'm glad that you were pleased with it. It's the biggest reaction I've seen from a community based off one of the stories we've done so far, which is great. You know, and it's going through the comments from the post that Katie made of people from the area saying that everything they told were sort of told seemingly was a lie, and, you know, there's information that came out that they weren't aware of, and it seems like a lot of the community is going, hold on a second, this isn't how it was told to us, or this wasn't how it was presented in the newspaper. And you know, I spoke to a gentleman who said that he never even knew that Jimmy had laid hands on Mark. In the media, it was just basically sold the fact that these boys just basically beat the shit out of this guy and killed him.
Right. That's the way they portrayed it, and that's the way everybody knows it. And it's hard to turn the people around when they see, you know, when they hear that.
Yeah.
And I always said the truth will get out there one day, and one day it will, and, you know, everybody's going to go, ooh. I mean, I really appreciate everything you've done. I can't tell you how much I do appreciate it.
No,
I'm just glad there's people out there that care about people.
In a recent call with Jeremy, we were discussing how the media and the police and prosecution did an expert job in convincing the jury and indeed the general public that they were three teenage boys out for blood. They beat a family man to death with bats outside his own home. And that's when he mentioned to me a movie he'd watched about a case from his home state of Alabama.
Have you ever heard of the movie Mercy?
No, I don't think I have.
Well, this was about early 90s. This isn't that really that long ago, late 80s, early 90s. And Jamie Foxx and somebody else. But basically, they framed the guy and put him in prison for raping and killing a girl. And he didn't do it. And he had tons of witnesses and stuff. But they actually took the man and put him on death row before he ever went to court to try to scare him into pleading guilty. And he had to sit there and listen to people get electrocuted in the electric chair and smell them and stuff because they put him in a cell closest to the electric chair. And they put another white guy, it was a black guy, and they put a white guy in death row too and made the white guy say that he dropped him off at the place for him to commit the murder to get him reduced charges on some other charges. And he ended up getting out. He's dead now. His wife does some type of nonprofit thing, I think. But yeah, I mean, Alabama is just so known for crap like that. It's ridiculous.
You didn't kill Rhonda
Marshall? No, sir. I ain't never seen Rhonda Marshall dead in my life. God knows I ain't.
Where were you on the day of the murder?
At my house.
Did you ever go into Monroeville on the day of the murder?
No, sir.
You never went into town?
Never went to Monroeville, period.
So this movie that Jeremy is talking about is actually called Just Mercy. It follows the horrendous story of Walter McMillan, an African-American man who was wrongfully sentenced to death for killing a young white woman. As Jeremy mentioned, the state built a case entirely from the testimony of a career criminal, a man called Ralph Myers. He himself had been arrested for a murder and was threatened with being sentenced to death himself if he didn't cooperate. In fact, they made sure Myers got a chance to experience exactly what he himself would be going through as they lock him up on death row, right near where the inmates are electrocuted. He describes the smell and the noise of an execution, after which he goes straight to the phone and calls the detective. He says he will say whatever they want, as long as he doesn't have to be executed. Walter McMillan would eventually be saved from death row and ultimately exonerated with the help of a young African-American attorney named Brian Stevenson.
Mr. Stevenson himself would face death threats, intimidation and harassment from not only the local community, but also the police for his work with death row inmates, and in particular, the Walter McMillan case. The family of Mr. McMillan knew that it didn't matter if Walter was freed or not, as the public would still believe that he was the killer. And if the state didn't kill him, well, the mob would come looking for him. That's where attorney Brian Stevenson would use the media to their advantage. The same media that had vilified him would now help show everyone the truth, as a 60-minute special airs across the country. Everyone from police officers, the so-called witnesses, Walter McMillan and his attorney Brian Stevenson were interviewed for the piece. Even the district attorney sat down to defend the conviction and its death penalty.
What's wrong with our criminal justice system is the fact that people want to come back sometime and second-guess juries. I don't believe there's been any law enforcement misconduct in this case. I don't think anyone's proved it.
If you have not seen this movie, Just Mercy, please, please watch it.
Prosecutor's job is not to obtain a conviction, it's to achieve justice. And one of the greatest tragedies about this case is that somebody in Monroe County has literally gotten away with murder.
You have 1 minute remaining.
So what now? Well, a Facebook group has in fact been set up by members of the Pleasant Grove community, simply titled Free the Canes, a link to which is in the show notes of this episode. So if you would like to get involved in helping Jeremy and Zachary get home, then follow that link. And of course, as always, I will keep you updated with all of the news about their story. 1 Minute Remaining is a Mashed Pumpkin production, created, hosted, and produced by Jack Lawrence. Audio and sound design by Jack Lawrence and Dom Evans of Earsay.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.